Before we get into the meat of today's program, which is the sinking of the German battleship Bismarck, tell us a little bit about your museum, Rob.
We're a public charitable organization based just across the Ottawa River from Canada's capital, Ottawa. We're in Gatineau, Quebec. We have quite a few aircraft in our collection, but every aircraft tells a Canadian story. A classic example of aircraft that we've had here in Oshkosh before, our F-86 Sabre jet is a good example. It tells a story of the first Canadian to go supersonic, but if you peel back the onion layers of Al Lilly, you'll find that he also was a precedent-setting person in the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan. He was one of the senior chief pilots, and if you go back in his career even further, you see that he was in the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and one of the first persons to ever introduce canine officers in a police force. Al is just but an example of how our aircraft are vehicles to tell people about average Canadians that did extraordinary things. Same thing, we've had our P-40 down here. The P-40 tells a story of Commander Stocky Edwards, one of Canada's highest scoring aces, half his kills in a P-40, which is very limited, especially in the upper mid altitudes against 109s. We've got a series of yellow aircraft that are sitting right behind you right now, and they are on a cross Canada tour telling of the British Commonwealth Air Training Plan. And for us Canadians, it's a big deal. Remember, Canada would have had 8 million people in 1939, total population, but more importantly, we only had 235 pilots in our Air Force. Think of that. We had 235 pilots total, and 4 years later, we had produced 50,000 pilots and 210,000 people for the war effort, the air effort in World War II. So all of the aircraft that sit behind you tell a story, and the Harvard that's right behind you tells the story of John Gillespie McGee Jr. Of course, he's an American, born of an American father, British mother, educated around the world. They were missionaries. They sent him to the United States to go to school in Yale, but he slipped across the border in 1940, very early in 1940, got his RCAF wings in Ottawa. And our Harvard is painted to replicate exactly an aircraft that McGee flew throughout his training when he was in Ottawa. And of course, McGee went on to fly a Mark V Spitfire in July of 1940 and landed, wrote his famous poem, High Flight, and unfortunately, at the tender age of 19, was killed in an RCAF Spitfire in a mid-air collision around the time of Pearl Harbor. So every one of our aircraft in our museum, although they're beautiful aircraft, it's nothing about the rivets. It's always about the people. Our museum's in Gatineau. We're open 6 days a week. Because our museum is reasonably small, we're about 30,000 square foot hangar, and we've got to squish all 18 aircraft into that hangar. We ask people just to call ahead and make an appointment, and we'll give you a tour free of charge. And we ask for donations. We're a charity. Did I say that? Yeah, yeah. And I'm the evil capitalist, by the way. The other thing about our museum, not only telling stories, but also we're a depository of knowledge, of working knowledge that's been lost. Andre's one of the few guys in the world that knows about the Pegasus engine that's driving this aircraft, or the Mercury engine, the baby brother of the Pegasus that drives our Lysander. And in Canada, this knowledge is long gone, and it's a bit sad. Even our F-86 Sabre, which is the newest airplane in the family, even the knowledge of maintaining the Arenda 14 engine in that is slowly disappearing. And our job is to harvest all that operational knowledge, all of that mechanical knowledge, and all of that how to operate the aircraft efficiently knowledge and maintain that. And we look on ourselves as an outreach. We work in absolute lockstep harmony with our friends at the National Museum, which is, if you fly there, it's about 1 minute, and if you drove there, it's 15. As well as other museums all across Canada, including the Canada Warplane Heritage. So we're thrilled to death if you can come and see us. And did I say we take donations?
Yeah. Andre, let's talk about the airplanes you have. Can you name all of them?
I think so. I'll start with we have a fairy swordfish. Yeah, we
just
have
like
one of
those.
One. Just like this one, actually. We also have a Mark 16 Spitfire. We operate a P-40, Mustang. We got a Corsair. We've got the Yellow Wings, which has got a Harvard, Fleet Finch, Fleet Cornell, Boeing Stearman. We also have, we operate a Beaver. It's a real Canadian airplane.
Let me stop you there. You said a Fleet Cornell? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Is that a Canadian copy?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, yes.
It's I had
not
never
the
heard
Fairchild.
That term. I never heard the term.
It's built by Fleet in Canada under license from Fairchild. So it's a Canadian built aircraft that they were built in Canada.
I'm learning something here.
Yeah, that's what we do. And what else do we have sitting around? We got a Tiger Moth. We have a Fox Moth. We're building. We also have the airplane that we stole a bunch of parts from the Lysander, another interesting airplane. We're also building a few other airplanes. We're currently building a Mark 9 Spitfire. We also have a Mark 14 in the slot that we're going to start. We're also building a Hurricane, which we also have a flying copy of as well. And is there anything else I missed? Oh, I got the Tiger Moth. F-86 Sabre. I think that's enough.
Well, this is your third year here, and I've done the interviews all 3 years, and I'm going to tell you something. The quality of your work is just outstanding. The 86 is the prettiest 86 I've ever seen. So
thank you.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you. And it's not just me by myself doing all this. We have a big team of volunteers and staff that are maintain and restore our airplanes. And the volunteers are really dedicated. And some of the stuff we can't do without them. And our maintenance guys, we have a young eclectic group of maintenance engineers with varying differences of experiences. We like to, like Rob mentioned, we like to preserve and this knowledge, the mechanical knowledge of these aircraft. So we have a bunch of young guys who are learning these airplanes so they can carry it on and keep it around for a few more generations, hopefully after even we're no longer able to maintain them.
That's great. One of my other jobs here at EA is I'm a crew member on our B-17 aluminum overcast just passed overhead. And it's so much fun to go around the country and show a piece of our country's aviation heritage and history and to meet the veterans. And Bob, what's it like when you see guys that flew these airplanes and they come up to you and want to talk about it? It's a real emotional experience for me.
You know, I can remember when the collection started, our founder, I was with him when he purchased a Spitfire, and the owner at the time, last name was Woods, said, one of the things that's going to happen when you buy this airplane is that you're going to be going to have a lot of requests from a lot of people that are going to want to come see this airplane because there's a lot of emotion, and it's a surviving example, and there's there's a lot of people out there that have stories to tell and may have never even spoken a word. Veterans I'm talking about, and let's just say from the World War II, and so they'll have a father or a grandfather perhaps that was served in the war, and it would seem that when they were finished with the war they locked it up in their head and never spoke about it, and suddenly years and years later they discover there's a Spitfire, the family is called ahead and asked to see the airplane, and grandfather or father comes out and having never told a story will suddenly open up with a floodgate of this is what happened, and my buddies, certain things happened during the war, and you just have to walk away because it's their moment to be with the airplane, and that's what opened up the storytelling, and there's tears, it's all kinds of things happen, and you just walk away and you say to yourself, they lived a time that was, you know, extremely stressful. They lost a lot of good friends, brothers, I suspect, and sisters. And so whenever I go on the road with one of these airplanes, it is definitely about meeting the veterans and letting them tell me their story and hearing about it. I'm just the messenger bringing the machine here, and I can relive what they might have been up against challenging flying the airplane. No one was shooting at me getting here, nor was I to deliver a bomb or a torpedo at an enemy target. But when I get here and I get to meet these people and hear their stories, it's just a pure emotion for me to... And I want them to tell their stories. I want to hear what happened. I really enjoy that part of it.
This would be a good time to recognize all the veterans in the audience. All the veterans in the audience, raise your hands and be recognized, please. Thank you so much for your service. Speaking of veterans, Commander Terry Goddard was supposed to be here today. What happened with Terry?
Terry Goddard is the story that we're going to tell in a few minutes. Terry is 91 or 92 years old now, and unfortunately we've had a very big heat wave, which was unusual in southwestern Ontario, and Terry just didn't have the energy to travel with us today. So I had the honor to interview Terry Goddard when we dedicated our swordfish to him 2 months ago. And I'm going to do the best I can to retell some of those stories that Terry shared with us. And on behalf of Terry, I know he really wanted to be here, but sometimes, and this happens to all of us, or it will happen, the mind is willing, but the body's not quite able.
I was supposed to interview Commander Tom Hudner, Captain Tom Hudner, who was won the Congressional Medal of Honor in Korea, and he couldn't make it. 5 minutes before the presentation, a guy comes in the tent over there and he says, I got bad news. Captain Hudner can't make it today. Thank God we had studied the night before, but it was a really good story about how he saved the first African-American naval aviator in the U.S. Navy. He pancaked his Corsair in 6,000 foot up the mountains, minus 20 degrees in Korea, and packed the airplane with snow to prevent it from burning his friend up. And one heck of a story. But, you know, with these older people, that happens. And I want to get into that story because it's such a great story.